This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. The element of surprise, unpredictability, the wild card, whatever you want to call it, as this week begins, has a new page been turned in the stubborn Middle East? Last week on this program, diplomats and analysts were saying that there appeared to be no coherent U.S. policy regarding Syria, that the U.S. was curiously disengaged from efforts to end the six-year-old war there and broader efforts to address the refugee crisis from the region. Last week, the word was that Russia's Vladimir Putin and North Korea's Kim Jong-un appeared to have free rein. For a while, there was a grim truth to that proposition. Bashar al-Assad attacked his own people in a rebel stronghold of Idlib with sarin gas. Initially, there was no U.S. reaction, but then, in the middle of a planned weekend summit with Chinese leader Xi Jinping, President Trump launches 59 cruise missiles into Syria and signals that Syria's president's days are numbered. The missiles overshadow the Chinese summit, by itself a powerful message. They signal that Trump does not intend to tolerate the open-ended Russian support for Bashar al-Assad. And then, over the weekend, ISIS claims responsibility for two deadly bombings that claimed dozens of Coptic Christians in Egypt celebrating Palm Sunday. The terrorist attack reinforces the Trump focus on ISIS in the region and Trump's strong relationship with Egypt. To discuss all of this, we're joined by former U.S. Ambassador Alberto Fernandez, who served as a U.S. Foreign Service officer from 1983 to 2015, and is current Vice President for the Middle East Media Research Institute. Ambassador, welcome.
Hi, John.
Also here is Dr. Leslie Vinjaburi, an Associate Professor in International Relations at SOAS, University of London, and an Associate Fellow at London's Chatham House. Welcome, Leslie.
Great to be here.
So would you say, and I want both of your reactions, has unpredictability served to make a policy coherent for Donald Trump that appeared last week not to be? Ambassador Fernandez?
Well, I think a bit of unpredictability is a good thing, and certainly keeping the adversary, your adversary and your rivals in the region, guessing a bit is good. Certainly in terms of kind of threatening and following through on the airstrike, I think that's a good exercise in unpredictability. But at the end of the day, it has to lead you somewhere. So down the road at some point, you're going to need some clarity. At the very least, I mean, what the U.S. government accomplished was it achieved a tangible unalloyed good, which is it put down a marker on one thing. A narrow thing, a limited thing, which is the use of sarin gas by the Assad regime, that's a good thing. I don't think we should exaggerate it into anything more than it is, but it's a start and it's a good start.
Dr. Vinjaburi, unpredictability, is it a tactical sort of strategic weapon here?
Well, if it was strategic unpredictability, then undoubtedly it could have some very useful purposes. But I think that the read on Donald Trump and his administration has not been that being unpredictable is about being strategic. I think it's been read as being incoherent, uncertain, and in a bit of disarray. So I don't think that that has served the purposes of trying to deter or shape the conflict and the violent conflict in Syria. I do agree that responding to the use of chemical weapons has been absolutely essential now that we know that the attempt to rid Syria of chemical weapons was not actually successful as we thought it had been. Undoubtedly, there needed to be a very strong response, but it needs to be part of a coherent strategy, both with respect to what happens now and getting rid of the rest of the chemical weapons, but also with respect to what will America do in Syria. Because now, of course, there's a spotlight on the U.S., on Syria. There are tremendous expectations. That doesn't mean that the U.S. should necessarily go further in, but there needs to be a very coherent strategy. And I think right now the read is probably that there isn't.
Has ISIS handed the Trump administration an opportunity to reinforce its clarity on fighting ISIS and on fighting groups that are attacking Christians?
Absolutely. The U.S. has been very clear, both under President Obama and now under President Trump, that the first goal has been to fight back against and rid Syria of ISIS. This doesn't necessarily put us in a better position to do that, because of course now the tension between the U.S. and Russia is even greater than it already was in the past several weeks. And we need, the United States needs to have Russia at least, perhaps not, it hasn't been fully on board that strategy, but it needs to not get in the way. And so this becomes another and much more prescient consideration right now.
Well, and the question really is, what is Russia thinking? What is Bashar al-Assad thinking? Here's U.S. Ambassador to the U.N. Nikki Haley speaking with Jake Tapper on CNN on Sunday.
We know that it is not going to be, there's not any sort of option where a political solution is going to happen with Assad at the head of the regime. It just, if you look at his actions, if you look at the situation, it's going to be hard to see a government that's peaceful and stable with Assad.
Now, Assad was talked about, Ambassador, as someone who was going to be present in any settlement of the civil war as recently as 2 weeks ago. Now, it's regime change. What do you think?
Well, I think you're reading too much into it. And even the statement a couple of weeks ago was a recognition that the regime, the Syrian regime, the Assad regime in power, it has a role to play, and that it's militarily seemed on the upswing after the taking of the, you know, the rubble and the ruins remaining of Aleppo and some other military successes, the support from Iran and Russia. It is militarily on the upswing, and the great phantom or the great fear of U.S. governments, including the previous administration, was you destroy the regime, you destroy the Assad regime, and you have a vacuum, you have chaos, you have a Iraq-type situation. So there's always been this tension or this sense that Assad is a really bad guy. It would be great to somehow remove him, but not removing the regime itself, not removing the whole thing. The problem is the Assad regime, like other kind of authoritarian regimes in the region, intentionally form a very strong connection between regimes and the rulers. It's not easy to separate one from the other. They tend to fall and rise together.
Ambassador Alberto Fernandez, listen to this statement from Rex Tillerson, Secretary of State, on ABC's This Week on Saturday. And I'm wondering if the words that Tillerson is saying, if you read between the lines, are preparing the ground for another bit of unpredictability regarding Donald Trump.
The strike was a message to Bashar al-Assad that your multiple violations of your agreements at the UN, your agreements under the chemical weapons charter back in 2013, that those would not go without a response in the future. And we are asking Russia to fulfill its commitment, and we're asking and calling on Bashar al-Assad to cease the use of these weapons. Other than that, there is no change to our military posture.
Ambassador, is he saying that if Bashar al-Assad continues to use weapons of mass destruction, that the Trump administration might consider the use of weapons of mass destruction in Damascus?
No, what he's saying is that if the regime continues to use weapons of mass destruction, meaning poison gas, the administration will respond at a time and a place in a proportional way of its own using. And that could be anywhere. That could be in Damascus. That could be anywhere in Assad-controlled Syria. But it's open-ended but very narrow. So I think that they've managed it well so far. I mean, the threat is there of taking action, of retaliation, but it's very narrowly focused. And if you're going to do that, that's probably the best way to do it.
Dr. Vijayamurthy, does Russia feel as though it's a connection to Syria, maybe as a liability this week, much more than it was perhaps thinking in the last 6 months?
Well, if that's the case, it's certainly not what they've said. I mean, as we know, Russia has come out incredibly critical of the U.S. strikes. It's backed Assad. It hasn't recognized that he was responsible for the use of chemical weapons. But of course, it's not great for Russia to have Assad acting up in this way. And so it'd be very interesting to see what happens in this visit. We won't necessarily hear everything because, of course, Secretary Tillerson doesn't like to communicate with the media, and a lot of this would be off the record anyway. But this will be the most important meeting he's had in his career to date. The meeting with Lavrov in Russia, some way of putting pressure on Russia to persuade Assad that he's got to change his course of action is really the only way out of this conundrum, I think. But it's not great for Russia. But then again, they're not about to let go of Assad. So Assad's in this game, whether we want him or not. And the current administration has sent a lot of mixed messages. Nikki Haley and Rex Tillerson, obviously not on the same page about this. But it's absolutely right. The last thing that we need is to create a vacuum in Syria that will lead to all sorts of chaos and potentially bring the U.S. much deeper into a conflict than it wants to be.
Although I was looking at media reports out of China and out of Russia, And the cruise missile strike, Ambassador, seemed to suggest both to Xi Jinping and to Russia that Donald Trump is prepared to act unilaterally if he doesn't like these alliances regarding North Korea, regarding Bashar al-Assad, and that that has changed the game.
No, that's a good message to send, and that's a good message I think that it's being seen and noticed from Havana to Pyongyang. And by the way, I'd push back a little bit when we talk about incoherence or disconnect. You know, certainly in the Middle East, there is no administration that is seen as incoherent as much as the previous one was. And one of the reasons that President Trump has been received relatively positively by many, if not most, in fact, most governments in the Middle East, is because they see him as the possibility of being something different than the cynical, incoherent, disastrous foreign policy in the Middle East of the previous administration.
Dr. Vinjamuri, I see you're shaking your head.
Yeah, I mean, I think part of what's going on in the Middle East, of course, is that they're happy that President Trump is returning to some traditional alliances and taking a much tougher line on Iran. Now, you have to remember the previous administration had a very obvious reason for being tremendously reluctant to move fast on Syria. And it wasn't obvious at the time that using military strikes in response to the chemical weapons attacks in 2013 was going to be more successful than the deal that was brokered at the time. Incredibly tough set of alternatives. And I think given, with respect simply to the question of chemical weapons, given the alternatives that they face, that the deal that was brokered was not a bad one. Now we're in a very different situation, and the conflict's gotten much worse. It's a tough set of alternatives, and we've got to wait and see what happens. Mm-hmm.
Incremental Obama or stirring the pot if you're Donald Trump? The two contrasts are very evident as we begin this week. Former U.S. Ambassador Alberto Fernandez served as a U.S. Foreign Service officer from 1983 to 2015. Currently is Vice President for the Middle East Media Research Institute. Ambassador, thanks so much.
Thank you.
And thanks to Dr. Leslie Vinjamuri, who's an Associate Professor in International Relations at the School of Oriental and African Studies at the University of London and an Associate Fellow at London's Chatham House. Doctor, thanks.
Thank you.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.